DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
I am the host of the Yoga War podcast. I'm so excited today to be hosting Shiraka, brought to you also by the, I have to read this because it's such a long name, American Muslim and Multi-Faith Women's Empowerment Council. Sorry, I know it's AMWEC.
That one is how
I, yes, exactly. I have to write this one down, even though Soraya Dean was on Grace the Show with her presence just this week. Anila Ali has also been on the show. And on 9/11 this coming Thursday, I'm excited to be hosting Dalia Ziada. Hopefully you guys all know her. It's going to be an amazing show. But we have an amazing show in store tonight. I'm so excited to have these four beautiful young people here with me. I had the honor and privilege of listening to Yosef speak at Sinai Temple on Shabbat, and I have to say it's the first time I have ever seen a standing ovation in synagogue. You're in for a real treat. These are four amazing human beings who are literally putting their lives on the line in order to stand with the Jewish people hand in hand in peace. So if you could just give them a round of applause. I'm going to hand it over to Soraya to introduce them briefly, and then we will get on with the programming. You can take the
Thank you, Shana. About 19 years ago, I had just had my daughter. She was 2 years old, and I was going to the gym to lose some weight, still work in progress. And there was a man, an older man, who was working out right next to me. Every day we met, we got to know each other. And he said to me one day, "Soraya, do you want to run the Los Angeles Marathon?" And I said, "No, I'm not a marathon runner." But I knew that he had decided for me. So there are times, that's a long story I say, but I'm going to cut it short. There are times in our life we have to believe, have faith and believe in someone else's faith until ours kicks in. And I say this with deep meaning because today, as we look around the world, we see challenging situations. People are not talking to one another, they don't want to be seen together. And I personally, I have so many stories. We as Muslims are marginalized and ostracized because we stand with the Jewish people, we stand with the state of Israel. So on that note, I want to welcome these my four brothers and sisters from another mother. They will talk to you about what they do, and they're going to give us hope. Because if you know, in 2016, Donald Trump had a vision, and he called his attorney friend, and he said, "Do something that some others have not done." And he came up with Abraham Accords. And then, as usual, the Palestinians, led by Hamas, they were looking to see what is in it for me, and they didn't like it. But the leaders of those Arab countries like UAE and the other countries, they were looking to see what is in it for my people, our people. Because they are tired of war in the Middle East. So these leaders, they're coming from those countries, all of them, they said, "No, we are going to think different, we are going to act different." So I think that's a call for all of us. When we go back from here today, we're going to think different, we're going to act different. We're going to have lots of hope. But hope is not a strategy. We're going to take tremendous action. On that note, I'm going to welcome every one of you who came here today. I'm so grateful. Thank you so much to my friend, particularly Sonal, who came from Corona. She had business, but she cut it short and she came. And then Nadine from Michigan and Sarah brought so many people here. Thank you. I'm really grateful.
Thank you so much.
Yes. We must deeply believe that every meeting with someone is a divine intervention. There is a meaning for this. So we must nurture that, nourish that, and we must work and collaborate together. Over
Amen.
To you.
Thank
no.
You. Amen.
Thank you.
Switch this with you.
Okay. So let's go ahead and get started. I don't know if you guys have a preferred order that you'd like to speak, but if I could just ask that each one of you at least introduce yourself, give us a short bio, and whatever it is that you want to say to the world, the show is yours.
I'll maybe just say a short word about Sharaka as an organization, and then we'll start with Yusuf and go like this. Sharaka in Arabic means partnership. I'm Noah Meyelov, the managing director of the organization. Maybe I'll say a couple of words later about myself, but about Sharaka. Sharaka in Arabic means partnership. And basically, after the Abraham Accords were signed, like Soraya beautifully described, 5 years ago, exactly 5 years ago, in a couple of days, entrepreneurs from each one of the countries, from Israel, the Emirates, Bahrain, and Morocco, they came together and asked, okay, the governments have signed the agreements, but we understand it's not enough. How do we bring it to the peoples? Because if you don't bring it to the people, it's not sustainable. A very good example, unfortunately, is the peace agreement between Israel and Egypt and Jordan. The security and political echelons are into it, and of course, we thank God and the government for still having it, but it hasn't trickled down to the people themselves. And you always feel it's like a moment from disappearing. And when they came together and established Sharaka, they said, okay, let's focus on the people themselves. So our bread and butter, what we usually do on a daily basis, is not here in America, but back in the Middle East, we bring people together. I like to call it sometimes, it's like a birthright for Middle Easterns. Arabs and Muslims coming to Israel, getting to know what Israel truly is. Israel is going to the Abraham Accords countries and meeting and inspiring other Middle Easterns, that they weren't familiar with. So that's what Sharaka does on a general basis. We also come here to the U.S. because we understand that, unfortunately, if we like it or not, what happens in America doesn't stay in America. It influences us back in the Middle East, and we feel that the polarization here is influencing us, and we want to show that a different, more nuanced, more dialected conversation can happen. We don't agree on everything, but we agree that we need to move forward by discussions, by speaking with each other. And this is hopefully what we'll show today. So let's start with you. So share us your story and
sure,
we'll start from there.
Good evening, everyone. Very happy to be here with you and honored to be one of your guests. So my name is Yusuf Lazari. I am from Marrakech, Morocco. And as Noam loves to start, like, let's put a context and then we start with a story. So my context as a Moroccan is that we are the only Arab country that has a judicial rabbinic law in its own constitution. And many people, they don't know about this because they are like, okay, it's a Muslim country, but by design, by constitution, it could be also a Jewish country. The idea behind that is that we live together since forever. And we talk here about two waves of Jews that they came to Morocco. First one was after the destruction of the first temple, more than 2,000 years ago. And second one after the Spanish Inquisition, where they got expelled from Spain and they found Jews in Morocco, and that was at the great surprise. To be honest with you, I've never knew any tensions between Muslims and Jews back in Morocco because we have a good leadership where a king kind of understands the specificities of every diaspora. But in the same time, as I can recall through history books, the last tensions, they were back in 1967, where a lot of Jews, they got to fly to France, to Canada, etc., etc. But since then, we kept a Jewish community all over across Morocco. This is where I grew up. My both parents, I was spoiled enough. They both grew with Jewish neighbors and friends, and that's how I was educated. Still, we were not kind of immune from this from the media back then. Now it's becoming social media. And here I'm talking about the effect or the impact of Al Jazeera and other social media, how they divided us, how they demonized Israel, how they portrayed as the antagonist of the story. And for me, to be honest with you, I was somehow a victim of that, because if sometimes I compare my life with my Jewish neighbor, and I'm like, oh, the Jews are okay, the Zionists are bad. But the more I grow up, the more I'm like, oh, they are the same. There is no Jews or Zionists, it's quite the same thing. But where I will confirm that, it's when I went to Israel 3 years ago. To be honest with you, I didn't know what to expect. And but to my surprise, there was this woman, she was veiled in Ben Gurion Airport. It was the COVID time back then. And I was shocked. I was like, what are you doing here, veiled? It was clearly a Muslim woman. And I asked her so many questions at a time. What are you doing? Who are you, etc. She was like, just give me your nose. I'm going to do a PCR test to you. And later on, she answered with the coolest answer ever. And I liked that. She was like, listen, my parents are Palestinians, but I am an Arab Israeli. End of story. It was very cool, very serene in my mind. And this made me reflect on those evolving identities, like the Hashemite just near the Syrians, and they are becoming right now Jordanians, back in 1946. How many countries they started to have their own national identity, just like Israelis. So why we blame or judge Israelis for moving to their ancestral, if you can say that, identity that they used to have it. And Soraya said it very well, that if we are good Muslims, if we really believe in our Islam, it's the only country that we know it existed and it lasts, which is Israel. And even God said it in the Quran that we to Banu Israel dwell in the land, which is a promise in Surah Al-Isra. And when the hereafter, or one of the signs of the hereafter comes, we will bring you in groups. And we believe in that. We believe that Israelis will go back there, and it's their promised land. The problem is that there is what we call the religious narcissism. And everyone wants to believe that they are the best religion. And we in Sharaka, we don't want to fall into this trap. We believe that this world is enough for everyone, and can everyone can practice their own religion. And somehow this is exactly the message I am here to share with you. Later on, when I came back from Israel, I went as a tourist. I came back as a Mossad agent.
That's real.
And I took it personally, because there was a lot of nonsense backlash towards me. And I had to fight back, and this is where I joined Sharaka, with those superheroes just next to me. And I'm very happy I made the right decision. So thank you very much.
Let me just go on record that every single person who supports Israel is paid by the Mossad. I would check, honestly. Where do you think I got this? Thank you, Mossad.
Hello, everyone. My name is Fatima, another Mossad agent.
I hope they don't believe me.
But that's what they say, of course, all the time. And we are paid of millions of dollars. And I always tell
so
them,
nice.
Come check my bank account. My story started with curiosity. I always wanted to know more about Israel and the Jews. We had Jewish community in Bahrain, native Jewish community in Bahrain, but it was very small, and they have always been considered part of the country. So we didn't have this hate toward the Jews, but you know, because of Al Jazeera channel, as Yusuf said, we grew up hearing that the enemy is Israel and the Israelis, the Jews in Israel, you know? So I always heard this narrative growing up. Thankfully, my parents didn't teach me to hate the other. They never told me, hate this person because they're Jew or Christian or Israeli. But being in that community, that's all you hear about Israel. So I always knew there is a different narrative we don't get to hear in a Muslim and Arab country. I told my parents, one day I'll go visit Israel. And they thought, never in a million years, it will not happen, let her dream. And then boom, the Abraham Accord happened, and Sharaka was invited. They immediately invited me to go visit Israel back in 2020, 5 years ago. So I told my parents, and they thought, oh no, she will go. So I immediately said yes, but of course I was afraid. My parents were afraid. The only thing that we knew about Israel, it's a conflict zone, Jews hating Muslims, Muslims hating Jews, and that's it. But I took the decision and went to Israel. The moment we went to Tel Aviv, we went to the street as a tourist, wanting to explore the area near the hotel, walking down the street. So So very obvious, I'm Muslim and Arab, wearing my headscarf and the black abaya, you know. So it's very obvious I'm an Arab and Muslim. Immediately I get approached. Someone comes to me and he's like, excuse me, can I ask you a question? And I was like, oh no. He will tell me you're not welcome, go back to your home or something hateful. But he was like, where are you from? Are you from Bahrain or Dubai? You know, there was all the fuss and everyone talking about the Abrahamic Accord in the news, and I was like shocked. And I was like, Bahrain, my friend said Dubai, Abu Dhabi. And he said, welcome. We've been waiting to have peace with Arab for a long time.
Wow.
If you tell me this, if you tell me this 10, 20 years ago, that I'll be welcomed by a Jewish man, a stranger in the middle of the street, telling me welcome, happy seeing an Arab and Muslim in Tel Aviv, I wouldn't believe you. But that was the reality. Everyone, strangers, stopping me in the street, inviting me to Shabbat dinner. I didn't know what a Shabbat dinner is. But 5 years later, I went to, I can say hundreds of Shabbat dinners in the US, in Bahrain, in Dubai, in Israel, all around the world. People were so friendly. People were so happy seeing me there. And I was shocked. Immediately, I take this experience to social media, thinking people would see a familiar face. They would relate to my experience, but immediately I become this target. They saw me as a traitor, a lot of backlash, a lot of hateful comments. Take this off, you don't deserve to wear it. You're a shame to Islam. But that only made me find purpose. I went there to explore the country and meet people and eat food, that's it. But going back home, I had a huge weight on me because of all that backlash, that I actually want to advocate for peace and be the bridge between my community and my country and society. And that's what I've been doing the past 5 years.
Hi everyone, I'm Mariam, and I think I'm a minority here because I'm the only Christian, I think.
Oh, okay.
So I'm a Lebanese Israeli. I was born in southern Lebanon, and my family is exiled to Israel. So I grew up in the Israeli society, and my community managed to assimilate and integrate in the Israeli society, but still preserving our Lebanese roots and identity. So just for context, in 75, Lebanon goes through a very brutal civil war because the PLO tried to overthrow the King of Jordan, making the decision of kicking them out from Jordan to Lebanon, changing the demography of the country from a Christian majority to Muslim majority, and causing and allowing them to fight Israel from Lebanon. So they created a country within a country, and they fought not only Israel, but they fought Lebanese people as well. So while a civil war was going on between Christians and Lebanese in the southern part of Lebanon, it was a no man's land. We had no one to protect us from many organizations that were operating on our soil and against us, whether, you know, slaughtering people, stealing land, and just doing anything to, you know, control us in order to fight Israel. We asked Israel for help. So we were armed by Israel and with the approval of the Lebanese government, and the Southern Lebanese Army was created. So my father was a commander in this army that first fought Palestinians and later on fought Hezbollah. So this army is the last army that actually fought Hezbollah on a Lebanese soil. So in 2000, when the IDF withdrew from southern Lebanon, we had to run away.
So
we have a background.
Wild terror that literally take over my street at this time every night.
It's a therapy.
They're wild
parents.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. They're not mine.
Like parrots,
yeah, they're the Mossad parrots. They trained them with the sharks and the turtles. They have the Mossad ants that you might find sometimes in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah. Go on.
So when we were exiled to Israel, we actually again managed to integrate. So I grew up, you know, very Lebanese and very Israeli. I speak Arabic and Hebrew. I celebrated with my friends at school Pesach, Rosh Hashanah, which is my favorite Jewish holiday, and at home, Christmas and Passover. And speaking both languages and understanding the, you know, the cultural background of these people, both people, from a very young age, I understand, as cliche as it is, that I'm a bridge between people, between nations, between countries, and obviously between religions. And from a very young age, I was doing this, you know, telling the story of my community and of us as a minority in Israel from my point of view in Arabic. So my videos has become super viral on TikTok and Instagram. And, you know, when the Abraham Accords happened, we understand, even us as Israelis and Arabic speakers in Israel, that we have a whole world that we don't know about anything because we were cut out from the Arab world. And with the Abraham Accords and Sharaka, I joined the organization, I met Fatma and I was like, wow, we grew up in totally different households. We couldn't look any different than each other, but we have the same values and we have the same beliefs and we have the same vision for a better future for all of us. And we even kind of have the same life experiences.
Yeah.
And the more we talk about things and the more we share each other's thoughts, we just understand how deeply connected we are in many ways and how much we understand each other. And it just struck me over and over again how beautiful the Middle East is and how what we all share is the same values. And that in many times, and unfortunately, as you said, we are not seeing it enough, and we are hearing only the extremism instead of these moderate voices that have more in common than not. So I was very lucky to be chosen this year to Forbes 30 Under 30 in Israel, which is and again, I believe in this, you know, spreading this message. I do believe that we have a new narrative happening in the Middle East of more moderate voices, people that actually want to live and prosper together instead of keep fighting again and again. And hopefully, inshallah, we will see peace between Israel and Lebanon soon. Hopefully we will join the Abraham Accords. And this is a message that, you know, we push very strongly because we all want peace and there is hope. This is the message we want to say. There is hope, even if it's very hard to see. So, thank you very much.
The least interesting person on this panel, I'll talk very short and concisely. As I said, Naomi Yol is the managing director of Sharaka. It's a great privilege. I basically live the dream, the work of these people on a daily basis. But until 3 years ago, I was an officer in the IDF, a captain, and complete contrast, like from being in battles and warrior to leading a peace organization, and how did that happen? But basically, I'm currently in reserve. I finished 3 years ago my duty, and what I did was right after the Abraham Accord, we finally had opportunity to do business in the Arab world. Like, and we felt it, and I opened two businesses, and I was really enthusiastic about it, and I flew to Abu Dhabi and to the Emirates, and we literally lived the dream of the Abraham Accords. And a couple of weeks before October 7th, to be honest, I never told this, but a couple of weeks before October 7th, I was in Abu Dhabi, and I told myself, now I just need to go to Gaza. I need to visit Gaza. So this is a market. Unfortunately, my wish was came true. Not in the good context that I wanted, but on October 7th, like all other Israelis, I woke up to the sirens, I opened my telephone, I understood Arabic, so I understood there are hostages inside Gaza, so I drove, like many other Israelis, as fast as I can, without being called to the Gaza envelope to fight the terrible Hamas terrorists, who, as we know, as a matter of fact, and I saw it in my eyes, they massacred everyone, Muslims, Christians, Jews, children, elderly, they didn't care. As long as if it's a human being, we'll kill him. And on my way there, I thought, oh shit, my business in the Emirates, our thinking about the expansion to Saudi Arabia, everything was ruined. Of course, when I saw what's happening in the Gaza envelope, I understood there are worse things that can happen in life, except my business. But then I understood that the only real revenge, the only real result of this war has to be the expansion of the normalization. If Sinwar, who thank God is currently in a refrigerator somewhere in Tel Aviv, if his goal was to cancel the expansion of the normalization, all our goals, Americans, Israelis, Abraham Accord countries, we need to come together to see that we conclude, that we finish the expansion, that we create original integration, as Soraya mentioned, because this will create a de-radicalization all around the world, in Israel, in our countries, in America. Like, what's happening is because this process has stopped. So that's, I commit my life to this peace revenge, and hopefully we'll see it happen. And our eyes on the ball has to be Saudi Arabia. Once Saudi Arabia and Mecca and Jerusalem will come together, we will show Islam and Judaism. There's nothing that contrasts between them. It's 80% of the ideology and theology is the same. Then we'll see a completely different world, and that's what we're working very hard to do.
Opening it up to questions, so start thinking about your questions. I'll go ahead and start this off if that's okay, and if you can start thinking about some questions that you would like to ask, that would be amazing.
And feel free, we're Middle Eastern, you can ask anything.
So,
no politeness.
So my question is mostly going to be to you, Fatima, is that how you pronounce it? Yes, and Youssef. And my question is this. The governments of Morocco, Bahrain, and obviously UAE signed the Abraham Accords, and the peace came at an interesting time. From what I understand, and I hope maybe I'm incorrect, that the people are not on board the way that the government is. I say is lightly, I would call it about as cold a piece and maybe a little warmer than Egypt and Jordan, but based on what's going on in the United Nations, I'm concerned about the future of the Accords, to be honest. So can you tell me a little bit about the popular feeling, forget about the government, just the population. How do they feel about the Accords, about Israel, and how do you see the future of the Accords, specifically in Bahrain and in Morocco?
Okay, so I will talk about Morocco because you're right. It feels like there are two speeds, like the governmental monarchy speed, and then the people speed.
Speed up.
Yeah, in a way that how the monarch, how the king wants to sustain a sort of peace in the region, it's not the same speed as the people might perceive it. For instance, it was a lot of efforts way before this king that we have right now. It was back in Shimon Peres' era where he was very friend with Hassan II, and together back in 1994, they reunited in Morocco, and it was back then when they started the project of peace, way before the Abraham Accords. And this is why, by the way, if you go in Tel Aviv, just like meters from the U.S. Consulate, you will see that there is the Moroccan also consulate. It's not a new one. It's an old one back in the 90s. But the problem is that the population, as you said, are not really following. And here we need to understand is that what is challenging to the Abraham Accords is not what's happening in Gaza. What is really challenging to the Abraham Accords, it's what's happening in Gaza, how it's portrayed in the media. And this is very, very different. Because I believe that no matter what will happen, they will make a fuss out of it. And this is exactly the danger of the situation right now. I believe that why Sharaka is very powerful in that sense is we are trying to balance the public opinion. Because if we trust our governments, when we're talking about Morocco, Bahrain, UAE, and other Gulf countries, then who will kind of balance this those masses? And this is exactly why we figure among the civil society sector, and this is why we try so hard to bring a lot of people to Israel, to Auschwitz, because for us the main goal is that Israel one day will make sense to them. Because they are very far from the reality. it's a good news and a bad news, because at the end we just need to connect the dots in their heads. It's a bad news, there are a lot. So
I'll be honest, like the situation in Bahrain and any other country that's trying the Abraham Accord, that all of a sudden the Abraham Accord was signed. The day before it was Israel the enemy. The next day it was Israel, the a state that we have a diplomatic relationship with, you know. So people couldn't comprehend what happened, you know. All of a sudden, like, Israel was an enemy and it's not, you know. So I don't blame the people, you know, because they grew up with all this hate, all propaganda because of Al Jazeera, because also in the community, because of their parents, they grew up with this hate towards Israel and the Jews. But I think it takes time. And to be honest, we talked about this a few days ago. 5 years later, you can see the change in the people in the country. And I think that the country itself, the governments are taking so much steps in changing this narrative in the country, in changing the curriculum, for example. They changed, they took all the Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and even UAE, they took the anti-Semitic content out of the box, and they introduced the real story of the Jews, our curriculum for peace and coexistence, you know. So people are changing their minds slowly. And if you notice, like the past few months, even if we have protests and we have the right to protest in Bahrain, it's only 100 people, no more, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not like huge or hateful like it is here in the US, to be honest. And in the same time, people after October 7th are changing their mind so much more, because as they saw Hamas committing things in the name of Islam and saying it's in the name of Islam, people, even from Kuwait, that are not related to the Abraham Accord, spoke up and said, what Hamas did is not right. How can you kill a baby or a woman? You know, so people are speaking up. I love to say the silent majority are changing their mind, but unfortunately, they're silent.
And the thing that we all have to understand, and I can't say this enough, that the silent majority becomes the majority only when we stop being silent. If everybody speaks up, nobody will be afraid to speak up. And that's why it's so important that everybody in this room and everybody on this podcast take that brave step, start posting, start talking, start having the difficult conversations, start building bridges, because the majority means nothing as long as we are silent. Thank you for not being silent. I do want to ask you, Mariam, actually, I'm assuming you still have family
yeah.
in Lebanon.
Yeah.
I actually do know some Christian Lebanese in Lebanon. I was shocked that they came out strongly in support of Israel. Shocked, because I thought for sure, particularly with the last year of invasions basically into Lebanon. So what can you tell us about Lebanon, first in the Christian, but also there's a massive transformation going on. The government is really trying its best to rid the nation of Hezbollah. What can you tell us about Lebanon?
Great question, and thank you for addressing it, because so Lebanon is very divided. There is no consensus. We are not surprised that actually the Christians stand with Israel, because we as Christians, we had the same things done to us by terrorist organizations. The majority were Palestinians, whether the PLO and other, you know, they had other names, but we had many things done to us. That is exactly what happened on the 7th of October. So it's not a surprise. And also for Christian Lebanese, we were very close to have peace agreement with Israel in 82, and then the president was killed. So for us, we wanted peace relations with Israel. We never saw Israel as an enemy. We never saw it as an outsider. We wanted this. But again, the Arab world put a lot of pressure on Christians and on other Lebanese that actually wanted peace in order to stop it. So now what's happening, that actually the 8th of October, when Hezbollah decided to start attacking Israel, the Lebanese people were actually very happy that Israel is literally, like, you know, killing the heads of the snake, as we say, because this is what Lebanese people were fighting for with no power, unfortunately, because the Lebanese people are, you know, they were hijacked by Hezbollah for so long. They were, you know, so weak, and Hezbollah is very strong. It's a country within a country, unfortunately, with a strong army and terrorism approach. So people were afraid, but now we hear a wave of new conversations, of taboos that are not taboos anymore. And yes, you are right, we hear it in the news. People are saying we want peace, we are ready for peace, we have a president after almost 3 years with no president in the country. And the fact that the USA is supporting and, you know, giving support, Israel is attacking and again, you know, trying to, or actually really hurt Hezbollah in a way that its power is really diminished right now, to a certain that we never saw it before. All this is making a change in Lebanon. That's why I said that I'm very optimistic. And hopefully it continues like this, because it's very hard, actually. And there is a fear right now in Lebanon of a civil war, because, again, there is a very nuanced power that needs to be kept in the country between Shiites, Sunnis, and Christians. And this power, you know, always works. You know, sometimes the Christians are stronger, sometimes the Shiites, sometimes the Sunni. So hopefully, we will be able to disarm Hezbollah and have, you know, a sovereign country and hopefully agreements that actually help the Middle East.
It's a lot of hope coming out of three people. As I hope everybody knows, Hatikvah, which is the national anthem of Israel, literally means the hope. We're looking at it. Let's open it up to questions. Does anybody have a question that you would like to ask anybody on the panel or everybody on the panel? Yes.
Well, first of all, I want to commend your parents because they did. We all know that it begins in the home with the kids. And, you know, the fact that your parents never said negative things about Israel and Jewish people is a testament into it itself. My question to you both, and perhaps you, is how do we as Jews build the bridge? How are you moving forward to communicate to your relatives? And how do you explain to them, that, you know, how does it, that communication and bridge building work?
I'll be honest with people like my friends and my family. Trust is the most important thing. If you can't build the trust with a relative or someone in your community or in your university or whatever situation it is, because I love to mention one of my friends that was always a very anti-Semitic person. I love, of course, all of us lose a lot of friends and family doing this job and siding with Israel and Jews, you know? But this friend, because she trusts me a lot, she didn't get out of my life, and she believes if I say something, it would be the truth, you know? And I only invited her to meet the other, you know? So after the trust, just meet the other. I will not feed you propaganda or force information on you, and you will say, like, I'm brainwashed or something, you know, by the Israelis. Come and meet the other. So when I had Israeli delegations coming to Bahrain by Sharaka, I told her, she has so many questions. I told her, listen, why don't you come and meet them? And she was like, no, but I don't want to be seen with Israelis, so on and so on. I have to mention, she prays 5 times a day, and whenever she prays, she says, may God destroy Israel and the Jews. So she's like really hardcore anti-Semitic person. So I told her, come meet Israelis. And she was like, no. I told her, come, good food, luxury restaurant, we love it. And she came for the food sake. So most of the delegation were Arabs and Muslims and Christians. There were only 2 Jewish people. By a coincidence, I didn't plan it. She went and sat next to those 2 people. She talked the whole day with the dinner and so on. And she came later to me and she said, Fatima, I can't believe this. And I was like, what? I thought something wrong, you know? And she was like, they're just like us. I was like, of course they're just like us. She's like, no, I mean, their values, they even look like us, their skin tone, their hair color is dark, their family values, even the religious side is very similar, Islam to Judaism. And she was shocked. Immediately, she changed her mind, and I always like to make fun of her. She's a recovered anti-Semite person. She stopped saying that prayer, and she became friends to those people,
wow.
You know?
That's amazing.
So,
what did they serve for dinner?
So I love saying this. Trust and allowing yourself to be in a very not comfortable place to meet the other, this will build the bridge.
And with your parents?
My parents,
your relatives, like?
My relatives are very curious people. I didn't lose any friend like Yusuf. Yusuf was kicked out from WhatsApp groups.
Oh,
no. I wasn't kicked out of any WhatsApp group, so. But they say it out of curiosity, like, what do you do with this soldier? I'm like, what do you mean, like the baby killers or so on, you know? And I keep telling them, like I explain things to them. Some of them say it in a much nicer way. What are you doing with the Jews and so on? One of my cousins went to my mom and said, why is Fatima saying good stuff about the Jews? And my mom said, they treated her well. What do you want her to say? Like if you're a real Muslim, you'd say the truth, you know? So thankfully, like my family was always asking questions the past 5 years. Like until today, they ask me a question. Whenever I take a video, they ask me a question. My parents, like, they always have trust in me, you know. So they're always curious. They ask me about people that I travel with or so on, or about Israel. But yeah.
For me, I will add to what you said, since we're not very far from Hollywood, is that I believe that culture is very important. As I like to say, I think the last Israeli to be hated by those Palestinian mobs was Gal Gadot, because they tried so hard to convince themselves that still she's a wonderful woman, and that they forced themselves to hate her because they are very into this hatred culture. But still, I'm very curious about how culture can really bridge gaps. I saw also what Fawda, the TV show on Netflix, how it impacted Muslim society. It was number one, I guess, in the Gulf, in Morocco also.
Mm.
And when you see that there is an IDF taking care of a Muslim in Ramallah and all that, they started to humanize somehow the IDF, the Israelis, etc. I believe culture, music, I think it's time that Israel tried to export its culture. And if there's anything that I can say bad about Israel is that they didn't participate in the media war since the beginning, because they let Al Jazeera create a very new narrative, very far from the reality. Israel didn't participate in it, they didn't put a lot of money in it. We have millions of billions of dollars that are spent by the Qataris and by other
billions.
Brands.
But we own the media.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't do it
In all honesty, everyone likes to joke about the Jews controlling the media.
Yeah.
But in all honesty, because obviously this is something that everybody's talking about, it doesn't matter how much money you put into PR if the media refuses to report it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so this is what we're actually up against. There was a very famous article written in Tablet magazine in 2014 by Mati Friedman that literally outlined the media strategy to push down any stories that showed Israel in a positive light and replace it with pro, whatever, Palestinian, we'll say, stories. So this is something that people have to understand. It's more than media strategy because it's not being reported. The Prime Minister does have daily briefings. The IDF does have daily briefings. COGAT does have daily briefings. We have Amon Levy. We have Jonathan Kamikas. We have Shauna Meyerson. There's a lot of us who are speaking their faces blue. The problem is that the lies that have been spun are so outrageous, it becomes impossible to defend yourself
against such insane lies. So the problem, I'm not going to say that Israel does not have a PR problem, but I am going to say that it's the world that painted them into this corner.
Yeah, and I this reminded me of United States after the Iraq War, and how they had this concern that right now we are losing a lot of Arabic masses, and how we can get along with them after the war. And they believe the whole narrative built on the American Dream, the Green Card program, and all those things. It somehow brought them there. Of course, Israel cannot do this for Arabs, but at least I believe that it's time. Something we started with Sharaka, like with those cultural exchanges and programs, I believe that university can really get involved in this. We see very few universities who partnered with Israeli universities, but I believe with those exchanges program, we can prepare the future leaders of tomorrow. So,
amen.
I
am praying that the Lasad parrots are not louder than we are. guys, please do speak up. I was not expecting this to go on for literally exactly where we started to now. And this is another reason why I don't usually leave the windows open while we're filming. Okay, question.
Yusuf, I have a question. I'm wondering if you had any experiences like Fatima with friends that are curious and either be positive or negative, that you were able to share and...
Well, somehow I lost half of my extended family. My immediate family is still very supportive. Some cousins, roughly some uncles, that they are here also, they support. But most of them, like half of them, I lost them. As she said, she was not joking. I was kicked out of the WhatsApp group of the extended family group because of being a Zionist. But I believe that those people, they just paved their way to hell with good intentions. And I believe that they were very emotional when they saw people dying in Gaza, and that's it. They are very symptomatic, if you can. Can we say that in English?
Symptomatic.
Yeah, like they just see the symptoms of the war and they react to it, but they don't see the roots. They don't see that Hamas instigated the war. They don't understand the reality or the nature of Hamas, how they always wanted to perpetuate this war, and it's becoming their own business. So I don't blame them after all, because they are just reacting through emotion to what they see on the media. But for me, it is my duty to all the time to discuss, to show them the truth. Recently, there was a funny video Noam shared with us. I think Haysam shared with us about the Nutella store that just opened in Gaza. And they shared it also with the family. This is the bunker you are talking about. Yeah, those people are having better lives than us in Morocco. What are you talking about? I swear. And to face or to challenge their thinking about what's happening in Gaza, it's a long run, a long challenge. But to be honest with you, when you do things with integrity, you still find the power to do it somehow. Pleasing them will not do me any good in here.
I just want to make a comment.
Please speak up. Yes. The parents are louder. So we need to be louder. And we really need to be louder. So go crazy.
So three of us are Muslims. And you know.
Two
of
them.
Three. Count it yourself, my son.
You're taking me out of Islam.
So there has been a systematic teaching of Jew hatred in our community. I really own that in a very sad way. And I want to all the Jewish friends who are listening, there's some freshness, there's some depth, there's some humanity in the Jewish people that you would say still you would reach out to us. Instead of saying, oh, the Muslims, they're haters. So I just want to make an appeal. Don't lose that. Don't lose that. That comes from, it's a gift of God. So to open yourself and to want to be in friendship, want to be in community with the Muslims, Because when you do that, we get a lot more courage. Am I right?
Sure.
Yes, because I would be very sad if our community has habitually, perennially, historically been teaching hatred. And my line of work is also very narrow in that sense. I want to highlight the theological legitimacy to Jew hatred, that we need to talk, not in a way of pointing fingers, but in a great lament, you know. How big we miss this? Who are our religious leaders? You know, they just legitimized it, and that's not right.
So let's have Rachel go, and then you can ask another question. I'm glad that you're so involved.
I think someone started to touch on it, but maybe I'll ask it a bit more directly because I'm curious. Obviously, I'm Rachel. I work with these amazing people at Sharaka, and I've seen, you know, incredible Muslims and Christians from around the Middle East, you know, speaking up, speaking to Jewish communities, speaking up for Israel. And I'm curious if you have any thoughts of what can the Jewish community be doing for the Muslim community, because obviously this isn't one-sided. Obviously, yes, there's a lot of hatred and anti-Semitism growing in the Middle East, but also I think in Jewish communities as well, we also have, you know, our own biases and things. Again, from looking at the news, it definitely is both-sided. So I'm just curious as for Jewish people here are listening, or just what do you feel like is missing from the Jewish community in order to kind of help build this from the Jewish side? Because obviously changing curriculums and expanding the accords and ways to help increase Jewish education and Israel education in the Middle East is important from your side, but what can the Jews really be doing to kind of help with their side? Because again, in building bridges, it's not just one side. We need to also bring it from the other side.
That's a great question. I'll try to answer just because I grew up in the Jewish society in Israel, and I can see things from both sides. I do think that many Jews are finding it very hard, obviously, to see the others as more than just, you know, their religion. And many Jewish people are like very close in many ways to the conversation, to understand that there is another point of view from outside that is not perpetuated to them in the right way. And it has been going on like this for many years. Like, there is no direct messages in Israel against anyone. Like me, I grew up, you know, I studied in a Jewish school, and there were never any like hateful comments toward anyone, but there is always the thought that, oh, everyone's hating us. Everyone's wanna kill us, which is, yeah, we saw the history, obviously, but I think there is a need from the Jewish communities around the world to actually open up themselves, to try to see the other, whether it's Muslims mostly, because many do live in Christians, you know, societies, to just try to understand the other point of view and the other way around, and to try to find ways to, you know, like build the bridge over this instead of just closing themselves in this, like, oh, they wanna kill us. They wanna kill us. So they always react to this, you know, to this stand. Like, they wanna kill us, so I will do everything to protect myself or to, you know, there is no openness as I see it to, you know, more real conversations, even if it's hard. And there's always the need to protect the Jewish people and Israel and so on. I feel that there is a very needed, you know, a real open conversation, even if it's hard and even if there's many things that they don't like will come up. And in my opinion, yeah.
I'd like to add to that, as an idea of Officer Rufat in Gaza. I think Gaza is the first place in the world we need to be compassionate about. And say it publicly that maybe even a majority of the people there are enemies, but the few, like our father Abraham, we need to find the few who aren't part of Hamas and feel compassion and although it's not our responsibility, I say explicitly and publicly that IDF soldiers do the most they can to protect lives of civilians, and we're proud about that because we feel compassion to a human being. So in the years to come, and there will be very challenging years with the Palestinians, I think starting with compassion, even if it's critical and criticizing the other side, is the first step to go.
Thank you. Okay.
Come
ahead.
No,
oh.
You can go first.
Duke it out. Okay. So my question is, what is your ideal audience as
Sharka, am I saying it right? Who do you want to be in front of? Do you want to be in front of American college students, Jewish students, Arabs, mixed? What's your ideal, obviously us, but what's your ideal, who do you want to be in front of? Or it doesn't really matter. I'm just like,
so after this perfect audience.
Exactly. Yes.
No, our aim in the end is college campuses and the non-Jewish American audience. We understand it's strategical, it's important, it's future America, you need to talk with them, engage with them actively, and that's what we do. We've done in the last couple of days, and we'll do it very tirelessly in the next couple of days. By the way, we sometimes have the privilege also to go to mosques and churches, and we understand that there is the most important conversation.
Yeah.
I will say that in the current American Jewry era, it is important also to it's not even preaching to the choir, because people are feeling so unconfident with their point of view that even talking with Jews is important, and we find our time to do also this.
And I think it's important to mention also on social media we reach mostly Arabs, Arabs that see our videos and go viral, Maryam and my videos and others back home. Most of our audience are Arabs, and that's, I think, what changed their mind. You know, they become curious, they watch our stories or whatever, reels, and then they come asking questions. Of course, there's the hateful comments, but by time they change their mind, they open their heart, and they come forward to ask questions, and I found a lot of people changing their mind the past 5 years.
Which is a good opportunity to state. Follow them on social media.
That's
the way.
Yeah, share
that. And Fatima just published a book about her travel to Israel. So, you can find it on Amazon.
I'll put everything in the show notes too.
That's
so make sure that after you send me all of your links, every link that you've got, we'll put it in the show notes.
What's
the
link?
Can I say, yeah, we had the pleasure of posting them at the Iranian American Jewish Federation like
8 years ago.
Fatima blew me away that evening. Everyone did. Dan was there as well. And
yeah.
Who else was there?
Ahmed.
What happened? I didn't see any of the stuff anymore. We saw
it. Behind the scenes.
I mean, exactly. And so we're Persian, so we know what it is to, we had to also flee our homeland.
Yeah.
Because of the same thing. So I just want to applaud, that's all I have to say, is applaud you. I'm so impressed. You guys, they're like, when we met them, we were, whew. Truly, you're a gift, and Soraya as well.
As far as your religious leaders, do you speak to religious leaders in your community, one, and two, do you find support from your religious leaders in sharing this message? Because from the Jewish perspective, we don't see that. So it's kind of open to all of you to answer.
I don't know if someone else wants to mention this, but I saw this change in our religious leaders in Bahrain, in UAE, in Saudi Arabia, and even Kuwait, which is shocking. Yeah, they're outside the Abrahamic Court, Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. Especially after October 7th. They changed their messaging a lot. You'd be shocked. But unfortunately, you don't hear about it. But for us back home, whenever I see a religious leader very respectful in our country or any other Gulf country saying something against what Hamas did, I'll be like, wow, this is huge, you know? But unfortunately, people like in the U.S. or even Israel, they don't get to hear about that. Yeah.
You know, we've organized two interfaith dialogue. One was 2 years ago somehow. The second past Ramadan, and we brought imams from here, from America, from the Black Muslim community, and we brought rabbis from Israel, and they both met in Morocco. And the idea was, I think I would share with you one takeout I had from this experience is that you don't have to be less Muslim to accept the other or less Jewish to accept the Muslim, but you can be more Jewish and accept Muslim and more Muslim and accept Jewish. And because when you see religious leaders, they get along from a religious a religious dynamic when they challenge the popular learnings right now, and I saw that. And Noam just led another interface, you can talk about it in Berlin.
We just held a very big conference in Berlin, which we bring religious leaders from all around the region, from Saudi Arabia, from Syria. It was a crazy journey to bring them. And of course, rabbis from Israel. And we truly focus on that because I think in the West, people don't understand how significant this is. Spirituality, religion, it's part, some say it's part of the problem. We know for sure it's part of the solution. You need to bring them to the table. They influence the masses. So we really focus on that in our work.
What strikes me as we're gathering, and I'm extremely tenderhearted about this, but I grew up the daughter of a United Methodist pastor, and I'll just summarize it by saying we led from the heart, never from the head. Mm-hmm. 35 people came to live in our home over the course of my lifetime with my parents, Soraya being one of them. I teach in a school district in Michigan, between 70 and 90 languages are spoken there. Many from Egypt, many from Israel, in speaking from a place of admitted ignorance. I am right here right now, and I'm not here. And I'm not aware of the division. I'm not even in that headspace at all. It doesn't mean anything about any sort of arriving at anything. I'm just so in love with humanity because my Savior Jesus taught me to love people. I'll deal with everything else. You just love people and lead from here. And so there is no other to me. You're other because I'm curious that you grew up somewhere else. But just speaking from a place of hats off to my amazing mom and dad, I was never trained up here to even see the other. I mean, my dad, you name it, he's been held at gunpoint the whole thing. He's on the cover of the Detroit Free Press because way before his time, people were coming to our house from other nations. He's a very ecumenical guy. And, you know, me and Sarah have been friends for years. And I've done the Ramadan fast 7 times. I mean, I don't know how to say it other than my heart breaks that somehow we were taught to see the other person as less than us. So if I could be a voice for what I have learned and what I've experienced as a person who loves Jesus is that that I love you. And I don't even know, because of my open ignorance and a bit of lack of exposure, I'm not totally ignorant in the sense that I am in circles like this my whole lifetime of 61 years. But I feel a sense of such deep love that we're gathered, and that sometimes one invitation might be, which is just, let's get out of here and let this lead, and you will have all the information you need.
If I could add to that, as a Jew growing up in the shadow of the Holocaust, I'm much older than all of you. I'm like two of you put together. So the Holocaust was very real to us. And I can tell you with all honesty that we were brought up, and I went to Jewish school all the way until junior high school, that Jews could not afford to hate. That's what we were always taught. Until an embarrassing age, all I ever heard as a child was our Muslim brothers and sisters. I never heard another word about Muslims. It was an embarrassing age when I figured out that Muslims and Jews were not the same thing. I literally thought there were like Christians, and then there were the Muslims and the Jews, because they were our brothers and sisters. So I do want to say that our upbringing was very similar for different reasons. I think that in America it was this crazy intersectionality or the opposite, which is going into the corners of identity politics and separating us,
of saying like, I'm a whatever, hyphenated American, instead of just, here we are, not you, here we are, a room full of Americans. And I, when Black Lives Matter happened, two of my best friends disowned me because they decided all Jews hate blacks. I'm like, I'm your best friend. What are you talking about? It never even occurred to me that I had two best friends that were black. Not that I didn't, I mean, obviously, like I could look at their skin and know what color they were. But that didn't process. That wasn't how we were brought up to see the world. And I hope that your Jewish experience, those of you who are Jewish in the room, especially those of you who are of a certain age, who grew up like just always with this Holocaust education and understanding that there is no place for hate. This is not a slogan. This is something that we truly need to believe and understand as Jews, as Muslims, as Christians, as Druze, as Buddhists. Buddhist-ish. I know you're Muslim, but your mother was Buddhist. But that, like you said so beautifully, we all share more than we don't share. And if we can just understand that, peace is so much easier than war. War is really hard. It's not just hard emotionally. It takes money. It takes effort. It takes bombs. It takes soldiers. You know what peace takes? Nothing.
A handshake.
You don't even have to have a handshake. You want to know the truth? You don't have to love thy neighbor to not kill thy neighbor.
Exactly.
It's that simple.
I'll be done.
Liz.
I've actually, when I was born, I think my mom immediately was like, at age three in synagogue, was like, well, she really loves being Jewish. Like it was, and I was raised by 1960s New York City hippies who like disowned religion, you know, who only were like, oh, we don't have Christmas, so I guess we'll do something. I was really into it. So they like, oh, this really likes this. And I've always been super proud and comfortable and traveled and again, very similarly raised, like, I don't see this. Of course, I know this, but I don't see it. That's how I was raised. But I have literally since October 7th been, actually to admit this, like, afraid to be Jewish. And like you, I've just started noticing that it has affected my business because I am speaking out about it. And it's affected my business not with, not necessarily with anybody who I think is more, I went to a very liberal arts school. I grew up in West LA. So these are people I went to college with, people who've never even been to the Middle East and are from like the middle of the country here, you know, and it's getting worse. I'm following their posts and I'm trying to be supportive, but they're posting stuff about, like I literally just reported on them about the Mossad. It's a crazy, just completely lunatic, on social media, what do I do with people that have been good to me and my family, have been friends, have been trusted people? I thought allies until all this happened. And then do I respond to these posts? Do I say something? Do I ignore it? Do I cut them out of my social media world, but not my real world? What do you do about that, I guess? Or what do you recommend as social media experts?
I think that
we have different approach.
Look, I believe because obviously my background and my story was very and still very controversial. So I believe that you just be you on social media. Some people don't understand how to put their thoughts and feelings apart, and obviously this war is just taking all over us. Like as we said, psychologically, mentally, I do believe that. You just post yourself and what you believe in. I don't think that anyone should compromise on himself and his beliefs for anyone. And the stronger you are, you bring hope for, and you give hope for other people that are exactly in the same situation as you. This is how I see it. I would say maybe you can try to make your content in a way that talks to many people, like instead of just talking about Israel, saying things that are, you know, international, make it people understand that, for example, you know that Jewish and Muslims and Christians do this and this and this.
Yeah.
And in this way, whoever watches the video doesn't need to immediately get into his own, you know, bubble, and it opens up for a better conversation that is not extreme. This is what I would say.
I think the most important thing, don't engage on social media. Post whatever content you like, post, but don't get into fights with people on social media. It's not worth it, it's not worth your time, it's not worth your energy. It will affect you a lot, and it will affect your mental health. I try to do this as much as I can, because people try to drag me to fight them in the comment, but I just ignore them, and I try. So yeah, and if they annoy me so much and I don't want to lose them as a friend, I try to mute them, so I don't see their content. But if I can speak to them in person, yes, of course, like engage with them in person. If you think they will respect you, they will not harm you, they will be open-minded and respectful, of course. But if they're like very extreme, just don't engage it, even in real life.
It's
that's
true,
what
like,
I do.
Like I've never expressed my hatred with a comment, with the insults.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that curious people, they never express their curiosity with insults.
Right.
Like they are very quiet, they ask questions. So I believe this debate with people who insult them is not really, it's counterproductive.
Our experience with Soraka is that the only way to truly change mind is through personal experiences.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we bring influential people to meet each other around the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
and then people change. The social media is important.
Yes.
It is a place to share, but not to, I think if it hurts you, put it aside. I would like to say something that very important in my opinion. It was mentioned previously, but it came back to me now, that as Americans, I think the most important thing that I can say, from at least an Israeli perspective, everyone is talking about it now, is what Qatar is doing in here in America. We haven't talked about it enough, but tens of billions of dollars were invested in social media, academia, and media to completely change both the right and left wing. They're investing in both of them. And I think that should be noticed and focus on that, because it's not controversial as a Palestinian thing. It's like a couple of thousands of people in a random country in the Middle East investing tens of billions of dollars here. Why would they do that? For what reason? And I think that's an interesting place to focus on.
Have you tried to get any Qataris into Soraka?
No, there's
got to be somebody in
Qatar.
No,
there's
laws that
they
can engage with any Israelis.
Yeah.
Like it's out of
very,
very
rich. May I? This is going to be a bit controversial, maybe, but because he brought up the right and the left, and then you spoke. So right now, what we're seeing on the right is the Christ is King America First people that claim to be very Christian, but to me now are spewing probably the worst propaganda I've seen against Israel and Jews. And these are people who've never been to the Middle East or ever gone to Israel. Like they didn't know where Israel was on a map prior to October 7th.
Mm-hmm.
Now I feel that I'm also fighting that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I have my Christian friends. I know what it is, but now they come in, which I feel they're being somehow subsidized by somebody, because it sounds really like it's truly insanity. Like,
and by mistake, all of them are interviewing the Prime Minister of Qatar.
All of them, exactly. Like all of a sudden, all the YouTube
tiny
people
country,
became somewhere. Professionals on the Middle Eastern affairs. So my question, I guess, would be: have you seen this too? Because I'm seeing it a lot, and now I'm like, where did this come from? It's not what I was expecting from a Christian faith, but they claim to be. They're like, Israel is controlling, you know, we're the lobby. We control everything, all the money is from Israel, we control America.
I want to say something.
Yeah.
I don't think it has anything to do with Christians or non-Christians. I think it's just people with a lot of money investing in very influential people with voice and audience, and they manage to talk to them. Like, it has nothing to do with Christianity whatsoever.
Right.
Like, even in my opinion, even like the concept of Christianity all over the world is very different. And in Christianity, we don't put like we have, you know, it's very like spiritual way of living. It's not like do and don't do. It's not like, oh, politically, you should hate the Jew or whatever. It's not like this as Christians. So it's more about conversations that are people investing billions of people in it, and it's just choosing the right influencer and its audience. So it has nothing to do with,
of course,
you know,
it doesn't.
But now I'm like, well, now we're like having churches and us, and now we're like, God, we have to fight these people who say
they're fighting on behalf of Christianity, which we know it's not the case.
Unfortunately, that's the case. They always use the religion
to
create teams.
Yes.
I'm on this team, you're on this team.
Yeah.
Let's see what we can be miserable about together. And see. Like, I'm just so confessing.
Yeah.
I'm so not in that headspace.
Yeah.
No, no, you're right.
I'm so
people,
sorry that we, whoever we are, become here's me, here's you.
It's not
because,
that. I hope it didn't come off wrong.
No,
I feel like now another thing is being hijacked under the guise. That's the issue. I'm like, there's this fundamental.
They're up here. And
they're
all under fear.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
under
faith
and love.
And
that's
their ignorance
fear.
And they are being paid.
I think, at least my opinion, America is wonderful enough to keep foreign money out. I don't know, like, it's not up to us, but but people are trying to invest tons of money to change opinions from all of the sides, and it's not good for America because it's such a wonderful country. From the Middle East, that's our perspective. Love your country.
We need the Mossad.
We need to work on that now.
You don't need the Mossad. No, no.
Come on.
You're
in
there.
I'm
talking
about
it.
No.
The problem
is
you don't have enough people.
I check out Jazeera or something.
I mean, they don't love their country.
It's getting hard
down. They want to sympathize with, you know,
it's breaks
bad things. And they're like, I'm not American. I'm going to leave to go to Canada. I'm not Canadian. I'm going to leave to go. And it's like, they don't.
But it's also a societal problem
here
in the USA. Like, people here grew up in the Corona generation and then before, and they feel that they don't have any common values besides liberalism and capitalism, maybe, and then they just see a huge problem that they don't understand and they want to be the hero. So it's very societal problems, and I feel like here in the USA, you have so many problems, like, that I don't understand how people don't focus inside and they are very focused outside, but it's because it's easier. It's easy to see a war and be like, I'm on this side because they are very weak and they are the underdogs, and this country is very strong and they are colonizing without understanding the concept and obviously I will be with the weak because this is what we should all do. It's just literally ignorance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that we can solve this. What we are doing is talking to people that understand the concept and want to talk and are curious enough.
Mm-hmm.
And we need all to understand that we're not going to change everyone's. People have their own opinion. And we're not going to solve every problem in the world. So we need to focus on things that we are good at and we are strong at. And we have a direct way to solve in our communities. Hopefully we make greater change slowly. So this is what we focus on.
I think too, the ego, right? The ego is so fighting to be seen and heard and noticed that when we are on these teams, well, my team, your team, your faith, my faith, again, we're up here, and if we could somehow, in my little optimistic world that I do, I can only speak from where I come from, is that you want to be seen, heard, felt, you have hunger, you have thirst, you want shelter, I mean, like, I don't know.
Now, you mentioned this particular value, you know, I think time is also up. I want to tell a story regarding what you said, but let us give Shana a big hand. I think she had 4 meetings today before she hosted us, yes, and
it
was a long thing for her, yeah. So several years ago, my friend Shoshana was, she's a tourist, she loves to travel. She was traveling in Europe, and she met a taxi driver who happened to be Albanian. And the Albanian taxi driver told her that during the Holocaust, the Albanian Muslims saved 2,000 Jews. Did you know that?
No.
Yes. So Shoshana is very bold. She came back to California, then she went back to Albania in search of these families. So Shoshana is Jewish. So then she found the Albanian Muslims who, the children, family, who had saved the Jews during the Holocaust. So the point to make is that we all know this story, Muslims are standing by you. Please say that, amplify it, yes. And for me personally, the goal is I need Jewish students to know we are with them. They are thought of, they are loved, they are cared for, and they are protected. You know? The story being that during the Holocaust, Muslims saved Jews. Yeah. And I was telling this story to another person who somebody introduced me to. I didn't know he was a documentary filmmaker. He said, Soraya introduced me to Shoshana, now they're going to do a documentary on this. Mm-hmm. So these stories matter. So we want to plant these stories everywhere. Thank you so much for coming. Somebody said to me, when I was trying to get a speaking gig, they said, is she a jihadi? Can she take an oath that she's not a jihadi? So things are really rough for us here. Yeah. So we have to keep our heads high and keep ourselves strong and really surround ourselves with friends who care about us. Yeah. And Sonali and I, we are from South Asia. 63% of Muslims are from South Asia. We have not, you have not heard enough from those Muslims. We only think it's the Arabs.
You made a great video about that, by the way.
Yes.
Fantastic.
So what happened in South Asia also, Sonali, correct me if I'm wrong, Israel didn't step in to tell disrupt the narrative. They told the story that Al Jazeera was telling, and Jewish organizations also did. So we are doing some incredible work in that regard in South Asia to really take back the narrative and be a source of information for South Asia. So Nari, you have to say something. Because
no, I was just going to say, because everyone here, Sharaka, you guys seem to be very young, and I'm much, much older. And I have come to the point in my life where I want to take on people who aren't already converted. I want to take them on. That's who I take on. And in Sri Lanka, what I'm constantly doing, of course via WhatsApp and so forth, is lots of Jewish people come now to the east coast of Sri Lanka, because it's fabulous. And even during the Sri Lanka war with the people in the north, and now we're all best of friends, but at the time, Israel helped our government, and they used to come, the IDF used to come there for their breaks. So now they're going there, and here are these Sri Lankan people say, look at the Jews who have come to our east coast. But I'm like, are they not like any other tourists? So I'm having that battle, and what they didn't know is the largest Sharia university was built also on the east coast of Sri Lanka, and nobody knew about it. So now they know, because I'm saying you can see one community but not the other. So anyway, get the people who are going to challenge you. All these guys had, I mean, it was a lovely evening. It was so therapeutic. They're so therapeutic, and I'm just saying you guys have to have more of that.
So to finish, Albanians have this value called Besa. You were talking about love, Jesus Christ. We should also, I don't know, think have some principle where we teach this. This is taught to all Albanians from kindergarten till they die. Trust, loyalty, and friendship. So that is why they stood by the Jewish people. So I don't know whether we need a certain value to embody, and what would that look like? Besa, I love Besa. Thank you again.
I love Besa too. Let me ask one last question. That yes, you're in charge of any. I'm going to ask
no,
one
I'm
more.
Sure.
Yeah. No, I know you're in charge of the video. I want to ask one last question that I always end every podcast with. I'm going to start with Noam because it's going to be the easiest for him. Noam, what does Am Yisrael Chai mean to you? You guys can start thinking about that while he answers.
By the way, Am Yisrael Chai, I truly believe that the theology of Judaism is we want peace. Velo yisa goyel goy chelev. Our goal, our final mission is peace, no more war. That's Am Yisrael Chai for me.
To me, I see the Jewish nation as, you know, they, no matter how hard they went through, they keep, you know, they keep coming back to life. So it's literally Am Yisrael Chai over and over again. And it's just, I wish everyone can learn from this mentality.
I think a lesson that has really taught me is that no matter what's going on there between conflicts and hate and countries wanting to destroy them, but once you go there, you see how much they're filled with love and life. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a lesson to everyone.
So for me, I believe that far from politics and from regional conflicts, and you talked about no one Jewish theology, I talked about Muslim theology. Just focusing on Muslim theology, it's easy for me to say, I'm Israel, I am. It's there, what I already said.
Thanks everybody for showing up. Thank you, Youssef, Fatima. Okay, I wanted to make sure I said it correctly. Mariam, that's easy, Noam. You truly are a gift, not just to this room, and not just to Sharaka, and not just to the Middle East, but to the world.
Yes.
So, thank you guys.
Thank you.